Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakotans have endured wildfires and drought, blizzards and tornadoes, and notably in 2019, floods. For this week's Images of the Past, we explore the history of floods in southeast South Dakota, including the devastation to communities and livestock. I spoke with Crystal Nelson, curator of the Dakota Territorial Museum, on the phone yesterday.
Flooding is not something new in this area. That's something that every generation has had to deal with. In fact, even though it wasn't heavily populated in the earlier years, there was a major flood that happened in the 1867s. We just don't really hear about it much. Not a lot of population was affected by it because there wasn't a lot of population here. Sure. But we do start really hearing about it being really well documented in the 1881 flood. And that's really kind of what everybody tends to think about every time there's a flood that happens. They always go back to, hearing about the 1881 flood and everything that happened there. And, it was really a well-documented flood. Photography was put together. S.J. Morrow was the photographer, and he documented everything and actually turned it into stereo views.
Oh,
and
wow.
Became something you could buy and see. And so, it was really quite a notorious flood.
A little fundraising for or a business opportunity based on disaster in some ways.
Right.
So what happens during, have we ever seen anything since that time? How big is this flood of 1881?
That is still the most catastrophic flood of the area in history. We still have not seen, at the 1881 flood, it was caused, again, by an ice jam downriver. Real hard winter and a really quick spring, some extraordinary warm days. Everything was melting on the top, and ice underneath was still frozen and was just caused a dam. And at the 1881 flood, they talked about some of those ice gorges being 50 feet high. And it was just this movement of land down the river. Mm. And it's just never been that significant since. Not that it hasn't caused problems in later years, of course, but that, we still have not seen that much flooding. We haven't seen it last that long since then.
Yeah. What was lost? Livestock? Lives? A property?
Lives, property, livestock. Yeah. You see all of those things heavily affected. With the 1881 flood, at that time, before that, a settlement called Greenland had been created and settled across the river from Yankton to the south. Although their name was Green Island, they weren't technically an island. They were just along the river. And with the 1881 flood, their entire community just wiped clean right off of there. In fact, a lot of people that were witness to that flood said that they, when the church got lifted off its foundation in Green Island, they could still hear the church bell ringing miles down the river. It was just one of those things where it just wiped it all away, and people just abandoned everything and moved to higher ground.
Yeah. So they did not rebuild in that area.
They did not, right.
All right.
They definitely learned their lesson. They said, that's not a good place.
That was not a good plan, unfortunately.
Right.
So let's talk about 1916 flooding.
Sure. So 1916, it's the same thing. And you'll find, too, as we talk about these, it may only be, 20, 30 years down the road, but it's just the same thing. We still don't have a lot of flood control or water control on the river. We don't have the dams in place yet, and so we have the same thing happen again. A heavy winter, a quick spring, and all that ice underneath didn't get a chance to melt. And so in 1916, there they talked about the ice gridges being about 20 feet tall. The water did not flood as high into Yankton as the 1881 flood. The 1881 flood, the water was backed up onto 3rd Street in Yankton. And the flood of 1916, it was mostly the bottom land, so like the Jim River backed up and everything. They were underwater in Gayville. They were underwater in Meckling. They were underwater in all the bottom land all over. And so there's lots of photographs of being East Yankton, just as the road goes down, just a big lake, a big just all underwater. And the thing about the 1916 flood is that, again, the water is freezing. And for someone to, for livestock to be able to swim through it, they didn't survive. So there was a huge, huge loss of animal life in the 1916 flood. There are farmers that lost everything, their whole livelihood. And it's interesting about 1916 one too is just that those that could get whatever livestock they had on their farms to higher ground, they were all kind of migrating to the bigger towns. So, for example, in Yankton at that time, there was a law that was called the herd law, and you could not have more than so many of any type of animal because you weren't allowed to herd them through town. So during the 1916 flood, though, they had lifted that because they knew that these farmers had no place else to put animals that survived. And so they lifted that so that they could bring them to town and find liveries and stuff like that all around town. So, and then they had to sit and wait it out. In the flood of 1916, it was actually two different times. So there was first there was an ice jam that was west of Vermilion. And then about 3 days after that had built up, it finally broke. I mean, they tried and tried to dynamite it. They tried that in the 81 flood, too. They tried to get it to move faster, and there's just no success.
And, like, how did they try? So what were they trying to do back then?
They would just try to dynamite the ice dam, break the ice, so that the pressure behind it could be released. And it would move further down the river. So they tried to dynamite. Well, it wasn't working. They had to wait it out. After about 3 or 4 days, the ice jam west of Vermilion finally broke. But it was just replaced by another one that was a little closer to Yankton. There was another ice dam that built up. So they had no reprieve. They thought that this was finally going to give them a chance to drain out the lowlands and people could, you know, sit and wait for it to dry out, but it didn't. It just built up again, and it took another 3-4 days for that to happen. So you see, too, quite a bit in the newspaper in the 1916s. You really get that feel that everybody's just kind of in that sit and wait. They were trying to do what they could, but there was just no success in human interaction with these gorges to get them to move on. And so people just sat and waited, to not knowing what would be left of their homes. And they just sat in Yankton and waited.
Wow.
So it was just kind of a different feel than when we have floods today.
Yeah, so. The anxiety of that even. Wow.
Right.
Any loss of life in 1916 during the flooding that we know of?
Not that we know of.
Human
no.
life, you
if
mentioned.
If it wasn't.
Yeah. But plenty of livestock and livelihoods.
So yep, definitely sitting and waiting for what was going to be left. It took them a long time because not only do you wait for the water to go down, then it's got to be dry enough just to be able to your farm. So you're talking about waiting quite a bit of time.
I'm curious how you're finding. What sort of things are you finding? Is it newspaper reports? Are there how are people documenting it at the time that survives for us today?
Sure. So photography continued to be a big one. Lots of people photographing during rescues, having their camera, and more people had cameras. So you do have more impromptu photographing of things, and that's a big part is photographing. And then the newspaper. The newspaper recorded every day, sometimes a couple times a day they would record and say, oh, so-and-so, and they would get kind of personally. So-and-so's lost his entire farm versus, so-and-so was able to get to higher ground. You know, so it was the only way to really know who was alive and who was, surviving and, all that kind of thing. And they would get the rescue part of things is just such a slow process compared to what we see today. And so the information would just kind of straggle in over the weeks as time went on. So
it must be fascinating to read and put the pieces together and see those human stories that still are heartbreaking today, the catastrophic loss.
Absolutely.
Oh, all right, tell me about 1952.
Okay, and there, I'm not going to repeat it because it's the same. it's the same thing. It's, you know, it's a hard winter.
A pattern has emerged.
That was one of, yeah. What's that?
I said a pattern has emerged.
Yeah, right. That's the classic case of history repeats itself,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there again, it's just, it was a hard winter. There was loss of human life in that particular winter. But the flood that came afterwards, I'm not entirely sure how much was really noted to be part of the flooding versus part of that winter. There was just one of those, and it wasn't even part of the 51 winter. It was right away in January 52, just the whole South Dakota area just got bombarded that winter. And then they had that quick warm days and caused the ice jams. And you see flooding through the whole state. And, you know, there again, I believe some dams were in place, but the Gavin's Point Dam in Yankton had not yet been finished. In fact, it was still just a new plan and a new idea. But the thing about the dam was it was supposed to be a cure-all. They thought that they would never have to deal with flooding again after that dam was put in, and all of them, they would be able to control the water. And so I think it's probably a little frustrating that this would happen in 1952, 2 years before. You know, they knew that there was this relief coming and that this may never happen again, and, you know, it wasn't there yet. So I just think it's like, oh, gosh, might have been a little extra frustrating.
Right.
But the big difference about the 1952 flood, again, you have an opportunity to finally aerial photograph. You can really actually see the devastation in a much more significant way because of how they documented it that way. But then there's also the first time it was in 1949, and actually Yankton's resident was Chan Gurney. And he became, at this time in 1949, a senator and representing South Dakota. And he, along with other representatives, had put into motion disaster relief funding by the federal level.
Okay.
It didn't really get put into place until about a year or two later, but it was in time. And so the 52 flood is the first time you see a structured disaster relief put into practice. And so you have helicopters that can relieve people. You've got programs in place. And so it's just different. It wasn't as much of a sit and wait for weeks upon weeks to get the relief. You would have it much quicker.
Right.
And so that's probably the first time you really kind of see the modern relief program. that we see during our floods now.
And engaging different tools and to help people out soon and then and long term. Do we see the you know, the financial support coming in after, you know, after the fact as people rebuild as well during that time, during the 50s then? Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I don't think it was quite as much as we really see. I mean, like in relationship to, you know, your income, but there was something there to help people rebuild a little quicker, to get back on their feet a little faster.
Right. We are no strangers to disasters in South Dakota, are we?
No.
What do you see as far as when you look back at some of the, you know, primary documents or the newspaper reports, or as you do your research as a historian, do you pick up a tone? Do you pick up a mentality? Do you pick up kind of a describing who we are that resonates with you as you reflect on who we are today as South Dakotans?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of people would say, well, why would they even rebuild there? Why would they go back there and build there again? You know, if it happened once, why wouldn't it happen again? And, you know, I'm quick to remind people that the mentality, especially the early, you know, the further back you go, this opportunity to start a new life in Dakota Territory and in South Dakota was something that was well thought out. And a lot of sacrifices made for.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a lot of, I'm going to pick myself up. I'm going to dust myself off. I'm going to fix what I need to fix. And I'm going to move on, because this was this means everything to me, to my family now, to my father, to my grandfather, and it means everything to my children and to my grandchildren. I think it's just a huge Midwest mentality of that connection to our past, that connection to our future. And I just, it's just kind of a, it's not that people forget necessarily all of these past floods, that they would continue to perhaps maybe be in floodplains and things like that. It's just more of a, I've fought hard for this land. And this land belongs to me and my family, and I'm going to pick myself up and move on, and that just kind of makes us a little bit more gritty, you know, to hold on and to be able to persevere. And I think that's what living along the river is all about.
Crystal Nelson is director and curator of Dakota Territorial Museum in Yankton. Crystal, thank you so much for being here with us today for Images of the Past.
Thank you.